This story is so familiar to every one of us that it's almost hard to hear it again. And it's hard to hear it because, well, we know partly that we just don't live up to its apparent expectations. We know we are supposed to be good. We know that. We know that we're supposed to love our neighbor, and we know that it is a mark of God's love when we do so. We also know from Lutheran theology that doing so doesn't make one whit of difference in your salvation and their life to God. There isn't a lot of motivation for some of us to be good to our neighbor because we know, in the end, it's not going to earn us any brownie points for God. That's already good enough. So why should we bother? And for whom should we bother? Fred Danker, who's one of the premier Protestant preachers, once said about this text that he was perfectly okay with the idea that we should be connected with and love our neighbor as long as we're not asked to love the wrong neighbor. And there is some real depth in that. You all have neighbors who are easy to love. I have some great neighbors right now. I love my neighbors, and we all live within just a few feet of each other. I even like the dogs when they wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and jump down off the bed. Upstairs. Over my bed. They are wonderful people. But as I prepared for this text, I wondered what they would be like if they weren't wonderful people. You've all had neighbors like that. For us, it was in a 4-story walkout in Alameda, California. And Jeannie was pregnant, and our neighbor had garlic and eggs every morning. She was a lovely woman who apparently had never had morning sickness. Because I'm telling you, it was not eggs and garlic. It was garlic and eggs. She was hard to love in those days, as nice a woman as she was. She wasn't the neighbor I would have chosen for that part of our life. And yet Jesus tells the story about the Good Samaritan. This fellow falls into the ditch and falls, robbers fall upon him and strip him and beat him and leave him for dead. And you know the story, the people that you would expect to give aid go around the other side. The words are so important in Greek because there's this wonderful parallel where the two that we expect to give help, the professionals, the people we pay to love each other, walk around and it is that they put a distance, they draw away from him and walk on the other side. And then this other fellow, this Samaritan, comes, and then the Lord is and draws near to him. Draws near. Takes away a space between himself and the other. In his aid. Although, have you noticed it's not direct aid? I mean, he does kind of bind up his wounds, but then what does he do? He puts him up in a hotel, right? He pays somebody else to take care of him. So what's the parable about? You know, on its face, it seems as simple as this. If someone is hurt, we should help them. We should put aside our own stuff and go this was a parable about just doing good for people, then the guy in the ditch would have been identifiable, right? We don't know what his status is or anything because he's been stripped of all of his clothes and his money. He's just lying there. We don't know who he is. So when the Levite, the priest, the people we expect to take care of, we walk by, they don't even know what he is. If we thought it was a kind of bash against the clergy, then the hero probably would have been an ordinary lay, just a Jewish person. Because that's the hero one would expect in the story of the rabbi. But the hero is a Samaritan. Now, the Samaritans in the ancient Jewish war were the ones who were left behind after all the other Jews were taken away into slavery. They're sort of non-beings. They're the ones that not even the slave takers wanted. And over time, over hundreds of years, the Samaritans came to be understood in the northern Jewish community as sort of not great people. Not great at all. Certainly not the kind of people you would expect to go out of their way, and very definitely not someone you want as a neighbor. This is the hero Jesus chooses. It's an unlikely hero. The caste system, the Samaritans for the Jewish people of Jesus' time, would have been non-existent. And yet Jesus has this man as the hero of the story. He draws near when others draw away. He has compassion. There's the key word. He has compassion on him. Stagnolize. Wonderful word, one of my favorite biblical words. It means it's got to slow down. Yes. He bears his guts for him. He has compassion. He feels what the man in the ditch feels. Becomes man in the flesh. He is. Now that's all well and good. It's great that he does good, but I think at the bottom of the story really is the issue of what it means to be compassionate. It means more than just doing your fair share. We're pretty good at that. I mean, we serve IHS, we are involved with Angel Network, we lament just like everybody else in the world about homelessness and hunger, and we worry and we wring our hands. But the core of the story is that the Good Samaritan gets into the ditch with man. Perhaps it's not enough to just give aid. Maybe that's not at the core of what it means to be a Christian human. Maybe at the core of it is to become a man in the church. That's the splendor. It's exactly what God does when he sends Jesus to become fully human. It's what's so unique and powerful about the Christian story that God, as the theologian say, empties himself and becomes human. Even to the point of death, suffering. God's slavery is on display in Jesus. passion for service. As Christian people may need tempering with compassion. That we become not just the ones who are busy helpers, the Marthas of this world, but also the ones lying on the ground and bleeding the rich. One theologian suggests that it is only in becoming victim that one understands truly how to serve. In a conversation recently, someone was asking me about what I read in a book, which is critical of Christianity. And my reply was, I hadn't read the book, but I certainly had read plenty of them. And of course, one of the great criticisms of Christianity is that we are all hypocrites, which I really do want to get a t-shirt that says Christians are hypocrites. And then I'm back with, we know. We stand around and talk about how we need to do good in the world and be good in the world and share Christ's love in the world, and at the same time, we tear it out. We make it work. We talk about how we want to be open to the world and invite everyone in, and then we're careful to only invite people who look like us. We make a big deal about loving one another, and then we're selective as all get out. Maybe you're starting to understand more clearly then that we are not the Samaritan. We are the broken ones in the ditch. If we can begin in that understanding that we're just not all that, then we are broken and terribly different. If we can understand that the love is not just the love that we're giving, but the love that we have received, then we begin to understand the story of the Good Samaritan. Oh, to be broken enough. Oh, to be honest enough. Understand how cool, how precious and wonderful this God is who loves us. And that becomes part of our life when our guts are spilling out. Then maybe we can begin to truly. It is true, whether we like it or not, that we do not know everything. I'm not even sure that we can. But God does. He calls us to. I'm quite certain that we cannot feel the hurts of the whole world. But God, we can share the gift of God's goodness for that man. I am certain that there will be times when we will reject those who are worthy to receive God's love, but we will not be perfect emissaries. But broken and battered, we will draw near with. Not just those who are closest to us, but most like us. But the whole world. So, you Samaritans, you broken ones, you less than perfect representatives of the Christian faith, get on the mission to which you have been called, which is to be compassionate lovers of the world. To give the gifts that you have given in Jesus Christ for the sake of the world. To live out what small good it is. will spill over and through you.